Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento, California. I love to send people over to our website. The address is epiclesis.org. That's E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. You can zip over there and learn more about Epiclesis, the church, or what this thing called Ancient Future Faith is. On these radio broadcasts each week on KFIA Radio, I love to bring you a variety of guests to talk about this phenomenon, this theology, this wonderful renewing wind that is blowing through the evangelical church as we rethink worship and theology and discipleship and what it means to be community and rediscover our ancient Christian roots along the way. Today is no exception. I welcome to the Ancient Future Faith Studios my friend and colleague, Dr. Rick Ashey. Hi, Rick, and welcome.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you here. Rick, we have some things in common. I hope we get a chance to talk about that. And also your heart for intergenerational ministry. But I guess we ought to start by just saying, tell us everything we need to know about Rick Ashey, all right? Folks might not know you and want to get to know you a little bit.
Just celebrated this summer 20 years of marriage. And then we also have two daughters, Aubrey, who is a sophomore in high school, and Jesselyn, who is in seventh grade. And Aubrey is a real competitive, loves soccer and all sorts of stuff. Jesselyn's an artist. They both love animals. We have critters, crawling out of every nook and cranny in our house, guinea pigs, and then we also have a funny little dog and a couple of hamsters.
You guys are outdoor people too, aren't you? You spend a lot of time outdoors.
Yeah, we love the water, all swimmers, and we love paddleboarding and kayaking, diving, and then just a lot of camping. Love to camp as a family.
Now, Rick, you and I have at least a couple of things in common. We're in church ministry, and we both went to the Institute for Worship Studies, founded by my friend and mentor, Dr. Robert E. Weber. But before we get to that, though, you've been in ministry a long time, more than 20 years, and I thought it might be handy just to give a little overview of the kind of ministry that you've been doing and the places you've done it, because that may be relevant to the story as we go along in a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I started cutting my teeth in student ministry, worked as a youth pastor for about 12 years.
God go with you.
Yeah, yeah. Junior high, high school, and college, loved it all. I really enjoy each of the different age groups, and for a number of years after that, I continued to mentor student pastors. Really enjoy connecting with those guys.
You have a cadre of student pastors you keep up with, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. We have a monthly breakfast, and it's a lot of fun just to talk with them. And it's a little weird now to be kind of like the senior, you know, sort of the silverback in the room. But sometimes it's nice to provide a little bit of wisdom and just the like, yeah, don't do that, bro.
All of us pastors need somebody like that in our
yeah. life. I've also been a small groups pastor, men's ministry, adventure sports, and have also been the pastor. I've pastored as a lead pastor as well.
If I'm remembering right, there were several places you pastored, not only California, but let's see, Oregon and Hawaii. Did I leave anything out?
Yeah, we've been blessed. I was able to serve in the mountain community of Oakhurst, California, which is the gateway to Yosemite. And we've served up in the Portland, Oregon area, and then up in Washington State on the other side of the Columbia River in a beautiful little town up there. And San Diego as well. And then I was the pastor of a church in Kapa'a, Kauai, which is quite literally geographically the most remote place in the world. If you draw a line, it's the furthest from any other...
Really? No kidding.
Yeah, from any other piece of land. The Hawaiian Islands are the most remote place in the world. And Kauai is the furthest, the most remote, aside from Niihau, which is the little island right next to it where some locals live.
Rick, I said a few minutes ago that you and I have something in common apart from doing church ministry and pastoring. We both went to the Institute for Worship Studies, and in fact, it was all my fault that you went there. We met at your uncle's house at a Thanksgiving meal a few years ago, and you were interested in maybe doing some more education, particularly worship education. Tell us just a little bit about your experience with the Institute for Worship Studies, because I think that might be a neat springboard into our topic today, which is intergenerational ministry and worship. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. because that's really where your heart is, and you begin to develop and or at least flesh out some of those things at the Institute for Worship Studies.
Yeah, and it's interesting because my first reaction when you presented me with the idea of going to the Institute for Worship Studies is, well, that sounds like a music school. However, in the back of my head, I was always thinking since I was in my 20s that I had kind of set a goal for myself that I'd earn my doctorate before I turned 40. And so this came around and I thought, wow, I should maybe take a look at this. And what I found was a really unique opportunity to explore a lot of areas of ministry, ecclesiology. What is the church? Who are we? What are we to be about? And so, yeah, it was Thanksgiving that we talked and I put my application in. I was accepted. And literally the first week of January, I was on a plane to Jacksonville, Florida, jumping in, not really knowing exactly what was going on. But my experience there was fantastic. There was a personal spiritual renewal that happened in my own life. I had come from previously to that, there were a number of really difficult ministry environments that I had served in and needed to exit because of circumstances. And it just caused a lot of confusion in myself, in who I am and calling, as well as just my perspectives on like, what is the church? This thing, it just, we were hurt. And that just didn't seem correct. And so IWS was a part of providing a lot of answers to things that were stirring in my heart, but I didn't have words for yet.
Well, that's one of the things about the experience for me. I think you and I have talked about this before, that it gives you a vocabulary for things that have been kicking around in your brain
right.
for some time. The Institute for Worship Studies experience is also ruinous in the very best sense of the word. And I think people sometimes can't imagine that going back to school would also be an incredibly renewing thing for your heart and spirit.
Yeah.
I've told people before that even if the program was not accredited, I would have done it because it renewed my life mm-hmm. and my spirituality mm-hmm. and it made me a better worshiper.
At that point, I wasn't sure if my ministry career was kind of coming to a close and if God was going to move me in a new direction. So my going into the Institute for Worship Studies was purely personal at that. I was just hoping and looking for some guidance, you know, and some wisdom from people that have really invested their lives in especially how the ancient church lived out their faith as communities, cooperatively, as little tribes. And I was blessed, absolutely blessed from the experience.
I should say that you're listening to a program called Ancient Future Faith. My guest is Dr. Rick Ashey. He's a friend and colleague, buddy in the ministry. We are both graduates from the Institute for Worship Studies, which you were just talking about, Rick. And you discovered, didn't you, that it really isn't just about some sort of music degree, right?
You're right. Yeah.
Exposed you to a lot of other things along the way, including this notion of intergenerational discipleship. Let's mm-hmm. talk about that a little bit. When you hear the word intergenerational ministry, what kind of things go off in your head? What are you thinking?
It came out of a point where, like I'd mentioned before, I'd served specifically in student ministry as a youth pastor for about 12 years and then was working with other guys. And we've seen some shifts in culture and climate, you know, the spiritual climate of the United States, and especially here in California, over the last, you know, decade or two in some fairly dramatic ways. And I began to ask questions and began to struggle with how do we do this? Because things are changing around us and it seems to be getting more and more difficult. And at the same time, I was struggling with a lot of the structural issues of, for me personally, feeling isolated.
Ministry, you mean?
As a youth guy, uh-huh. kind of an island within the church, not feeling like what we were doing was connecting to, contributing, or that anyone, you know, any of the other ministry elements, there was no cross-pollinating.
I see.
And so I began to, you know, really reevaluate. If we keep down this trail with these students, they're not going to understand, appreciate, or feel a connectedness, experience a connectedness to the whole body of Christ. And then as they graduate, you know, what's going to happen? There's a lot of questions like that I began to wrestle with.
And so you brought those questions with you to the Institute mm-hmm. and began thinking about intergenerational ministry. I had the blessing to be your thesis supervisor your mentor, and you came up with a thesis and project that helped touch on some of these things that helped you explore it further.
Where I landed on that thesis, after wrestling for quite a while, like, what am I going to do here that's going to have some sort of meaningful contribution? I was kind of swinging for the fences almost in my mind. Like, I'd like this to be a culmination of all these thoughts and these feelings and try to get all this stuff that I've been wrestling with into words here to make sense. And where I ended up with was this idea of developing a culture of the transmission of the story of God.
Okay, let's say that again. Developing a culture, I assume you mean in the church, where we focus on the transmission of God's big story.
Right. And
that's like a big task.
Yeah. And the idea was that this would not just be like, say, from the pastor to the congregation, but that this would literally be from generation to generation to generation. And that's picked up biblically. You see all over the Bible places where there are referencing three or four generations when they're talking about communicating their culture, transmitting their culture, remember what God has done. Psalm 87 is a great example of that, where there's a dialogue at the introduction in the first eight verses. In verse 3, the author's talking about this idea of the story that our ancestors told us, so that the ancestors had the story of God's faithfulness, and they told us, our generation. And then in verse 4, he says, we tell the next generation. And then in verse 6, it says, and they will let their children know. They will tell their children. And then he kind of starts to wrap it up in verse 7. He says, the goal of this is one generation telling the next. And the telling is not just communicating the words or the facts. It's actually an invitation to step into the story.
And yeah, so the big picture.
Exactly. And so the goal of that in verse 7, he says, is so that each of these generations can trust God, remember his great deeds, and keep his commandments.
Now, the specific problem that you were addressing with your thesis project was there was a group of students at the church where you were serving that needed some sort of instruction. And your view was, hey, this doesn't need to come from me. This needs to come from parents. Some instruction about how they get on board with the corporate worship experience at the church. In other words, rather than just plop, these kids are coming into worship for the first time when they get to the right age or whatever. And in fact, you called it on-ramp. You wanted to give them an on-ramp where parents partner together with teaching kids how to worship, what they're experiencing, why we do what we do, and in the context of the big story.
Yeah, and we identified two groups of people that were kind of the quote-unquote target for this thesis project. The first was 6th through 8th grade students, so middle schoolers, who were already a part of the church. Our children's ministry ended at 5th, and then basically the middle schoolers and up were invited to participate with the community, which I absolutely loved. The challenge was that those young students didn't really know why we were doing what we were doing and didn't really understand some of the sacred actions and how we were doing the things
of the gathered assembly in worship.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. And then the second group that was our target were the people that were coming from outside of our church family from other church environments, because our church does things a little bit differently than a kind of your traditional like evangelical seeker style church. We follow kind of an ancient pattern of worship that has four elements, four folds. The first one is preparation. So it's a time that we give to prepare to hear God's word. A lot of times that's singing and prayer. The second is actually hearing God's word. So God speaks to us through the person that's teaching, through specifically his word. And then the third part is that now we respond to him. Having heard from God, now we respond to him at the table.
So communion each week.
Yeah, bread and cup. And then the fourth major element is the sending and the blessing. And this is the part where we basically say, now that we've gathered together and celebrated who God is and what he has done, we go out. We are sent out as his hands and feet to live that together cooperatively in the community and with the community.
Okay, so that is a good bit different than, say, the average evangelical seeker church or megachurch model of music than sermon.
Right.
And so you wanted to give kids and parents some tools for helping them learn what it is we're doing and why we're doing it in worship. And once again, in the context of the big story of God.
Yeah. So
what did that look like? What would you guys do?
Yeah. What we identified is that we needed to equip parents to equip their students to become fully functioning members of the body of Christ. Because if we just invested in the students, that left the parents out. It's their sacred duty. And they also, we were recognizing a lot of them, the parents didn't really understand either because they hadn't been raised with the big story, the meta narrative of God as well. So we were on-ramping families with the desire that they could fully participate, and not just so that they feel good about themselves, but that in their participation, it actually impacts and blesses those around them so that they're participating as whole members, blessing others as they have been blessed.
I love it. And that touches on the intergenerational aspect that's so near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, it kind of began that process.
Let me ask you this, Rick. Let me just interrupt and ask. Just give us a thumbnail. What did that teaching look like? How did that work itself out? What did this process look like?
Yeah, we did a 8-week course that we put together, and each week we would look at a different element of the Sunday morning gathered worship. And so for us, there's the four major parts,
right?
The preparation, the word, the table, and the sending. And then there's two minor parts, although they're not minor in the sense of less valuable, which were the confession, both confession of sin as well as confession of faith. So we talked about both the positive and the negative side, the sin side, with the students. And then also the passing of the peace and why the passing of the peace is something we do as a collective body that's so important as we prepare for the table.
I love the notion of parents and students together coming to do this intergenerationally. I love the picture of that. I want to talk with you more in a moment about your heart for this intergenerational kind of ministry and learning. But first, let me say, folks, you're listening to an interview with Dr. Rick Ashey. He's a friend and colleague. He lives in the Northern California region with his wife and two daughters. Rick, in our remaining moments, I would love for you just to talk a little bit, I guess more in general, about your heart for intergenerational ministry and why it matters, and why particularly do we need to be thinking about that this day and age?
Right now, we're really struggling with discipleship, I think, within the church in the United States. There's a variety of reasons for that. Some of it is actually that a lot of what we are doing is so me-focused in the language we're using, in the songs that we sing, and the messages that are being presented that are, you know, helps four ways to be a better this or that, that what we're focusing on ourselves, and in that we're becoming, I use a term, monogenerational. We are not recognizing that our faith is not ours alone, but that our faith is a shared faith with those that are shoulder to shoulder with us on a Sunday morning, with those that live in our home with us, those across the world and across time.
Mm.
And so the challenge is to begin to reimagine discipleship. I think that we are very programmatic, and there's nothing inherently wrong with a program or a class, but if we base everything off of these kind of start-stop events, the challenge becomes that's not compatible with the way that we just naturally do life. They're just simply events that we participate in and we glean from.
So what's the alternative, and what does it have to do with intergenerational?
I think that discipleship needs to shift from program to more of an understanding of mentorship and process.
Oh, how do you mean?
Okay, so where traditional discipleship right now is essentially we're going to download a series of information that's going to help you. Mentorship is we're going to do this together. I'm going to show you how to do it. We're going to do it together. We're going to live this out together. Mm. That can happen in the home. That can happen as I'm teaching my kids the quote unquote right way to load the dishwasher, right? But on a spiritual level, it happens when I'm living my faith out with my children, when I'm living my faith out with my wife. It can also happen in the church. Generationally, the members that have more knowledge and experience via age or just education or whatever it happens to be, those things culminate in a sense of wisdom that they can provide to younger generations. But even beyond that, it's the doing the life together component. So it's mentorship and it's process. It's identifying the fact that it isn't just a series of moments that we have to kind of check off. I prayed to receive Jesus. I got baptized. I did this. I did that. I went on a missions trip. Those are all very important, critical elements of faith. But to recognize those in-between times are just as valuable, that it's actually the long ball, if you will. This is something I've been talking to people about. Like, I feel like spiritually I'm playing long ball right now. And by that, I mean, I'm investing in my kids for their sake, but beyond just that, for my grandchildren someday. And also I'm investing in my kids for their sake, but also for the sake of those they're going to interact with someday if they go off to college, they get married, their lives, their friends, their families. So contextually, it's more tribal than it is maybe, you know, the way that kind of traditional church is sort of democratic in nature and we all just kind of come together in agreement. This is more, we're going to live this story of God working through history and specifically in the person and work of Jesus Christ on the cross for us. That's not just going to define our lives, but that's going to be how we ebb and flow as a family.
You know, what strikes me while you were talking is this traditional way that we have thought about education in the church is that we divide up people by gender and age. And right. We separate them out. And I'm glad to say that there is a shift to something new, which ironically is quite old. And that is a very ancient future way of thinking about discipleship. And that's that we're doing it together. I love that notion you mentioned of us coming together and learning from one another. Because I think for at least one thing, we forget that we older folks have something to learn from younger generations as well.
Yeah, you know, there's the wisdom of the knowledge and the experience, the life that has been lived that a younger generation can glean from. But there's also that faith of the child. There's the questions that challenge other generations, the younger ones thinking about their faith in the context of mystery, still seeing it as with wonder and awe, that can rekindle, can encourage, can spark, and possibly even open up for many of us areas in our own faith and life that maybe we haven't ever explored or maybe that we haven't explored for a while. There's potential for that. You know, younger generation, younger people now, they're craving two things. They're craving a story and they're craving something to be a part of, a vision for life, some sort of mission to be a part of. Those two things are somewhat interchangeable, but you can still invest in something without it having a meta narrative, a great big story around it. Like you can volunteer at the soup kitchen or something like that. And you can give your whole life to that and that can give you meaning, but it may not give you the big story meaning. And so when we take these two things and we offer, especially to this younger generation, that's craving stories and craving to give their life to some sort of mission, that's where I believe the church moving forward will really begin to see a restoration of the faith and of discipleship.
Well, and it sounds like your heart is that those things happen best intergenerationally when we're doing them together.
Right. Absolutely.
Rick, that's the kind of church I want to have. And that's the kind of church I think Epiclesis strives to be. Folks, if you are interested in a place where young and old worship and do discipleship and spirituality and learning together, Epiclesis is your spot, is your place. Mm-hmm. We'd love to have you come worship with us sometime. Rick, I wish we had some more time. We're out of it for today, but will you come back and do this again so we can talk more about this?
Absolutely, Chris.
Rick Ashey, it's been wonderful to have you here on Ancient Future Faith, and I do hope you'll come again. Folks, until we gather for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this. Surely, the road to our evangelical future does run through our ancient Christian past. The Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi folks, it's Pastor Chris with one more word before we sign off. The long season after Pentecost is the perfect time to experience worship at Epiclesis, or maybe jump into a small group. There's always something happening at Epiclesis, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. Think about joining us for worship this summer. You'll be warmly welcome. As always, find more information on the web at epiclesis.org. That's EPICLESIS.org. The Lord be with you, and see you next Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.